I'm going to call the meeting to order, resume back to open session. Mr. Trustee Criddle, can you lead us in the pledge, please?
Sure, everybody, please stand. Salute. Pledge. I pledge allegiance to the flag, the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Thank you. Please be seated.
Thank you very much. Let the record show that all board members are present. We do have a couple of changes to our agenda. Hopefully all the board members and participant got the addendum to the board agenda for educational services, number 5. And then we have a couple of changes on page 9 under buildings and grounds. Under the approval of leaseback guaranteed maximum price, it's actually the changes would be on page 10, if you could turn to page 10. There's actually 3 changes that we're going to make here. In the first paragraph in the financial impact, most of the way down, you'll see where the sentence it has the GMP of $17,108,916. We need to change that number to $17,108,691. So we have all the right numbers, just not quite in the right place. So $17,108,691. Then the second change, right past that, it says plus soft costs of $2.9 million. We need to change $2.9 million to $1,621,434. 1621434. Then the last one is in the total project cost. The new number is going to be $18,730,125. Okay, so those were the 3 changes that we had. Next, we have the announcement of action taken in closed session. There was no action to announce. Comments from board members. Trustee Davis.
I wasn't ready. The one comment I wanted to have is, and I just continue to want to acknowledge the community for supporting our schools. We had 2 amazing gifts, that one went to Ella Elementary and one went to Marysville Charter Academy for the Arts. A total of $11,000 that came in from the public. And I just think that we, acknowledging them, I know they get acknowledged on their schools, but I just think it's really important for us to commend them from the board. And I just hope that everybody is hanging in there for the last of our school year. I know it's still one day at a time, but we really appreciate everybody that has come forward, the teachers, the staff, our support team, our district office. So thank you very much. That's all.
Thank you. Trustee Crawford?
Yes, I would just like to thank both Yuba and Sutter Counties for providing the vaccinations to such a large number of our staff, classified everybody teachers. And I understand now that they're now beginning to vaccinate our high school kids I think that's great. Maybe there is some light at the end. And I'd really like to thank, like I said, the county health departments and the whole school district. Thank you.
Thank you. Trustee Bo?
Yeah, just one quick comment. I'd like to thank everybody that sends out all the emails you receive. And I read every single one of them. You know, that I can't always or don't always respond to all of them. But we do read each and every one of them, or at least I do. And they go a long way in helping me to understand exactly what's going on.
Thank you. Trustee Doug Criddle.
Yes, I wanted to echo what Randy Davis said about the donations to Ella as well as MCAA. That was very, very generous. And those types of generosities that are coming from our community and stakeholders to our schools is put to very good use. So thank you very much for that. And then also I wanted to say that there was a very productive meeting we had with the two high schools regarding our meeting with scheduling and such. And that was very, very, very nice to see. And I was very happy to be a part of that. So thank you.
Trustee Hastie.
Yes, I would echo what Mr. Davis said as far as thanking the people who go above and beyond with their time and their donations in our community. It's an amazing place to be. And I'm very thankful we're here.
Trustee Gary Criddle.
Thank you. I have no comments.
Okay. So I do have a couple of things for us this evening. Again, I want to thank our community. Looking at today's case rate, we're right at 5. So that means the community is doing well, getting vaccinated, staying safe. So again, thank you to our community. I read an article in our CSBA publication that we received that outlined the great things that San Bernardino City Unified School District is doing, adopting student social emotional learning support for the virtual world. We'd like to read one excerpt from that article. At the beginning of the district's SEL journey, Williams said a huge lesson learned was that we have to start with staff's social and emotional health before we can ask them to support students, SEL. So I would just want to commend the district for all their efforts to support our staff's social and emotional health to better support our students. Thank you. So the next one is kind of bothersome, and it has to do with social media. Some posts regarding our district were shared with me since our last board meeting that were very shocking to me. And I want to thank our teachers that defended our district. But from what I saw, the damage was already done. The public image of our district is tainted, and I hope not beyond repair. I hope everyone connected with MJUSD can come together and show our community that it is a great district with great people. I do have one on a personal note. I would like to say thank you to our local and neighboring fire departments and law enforcement officers. On Saturday, May 8th, a fire started in the field just northwest of the lane that we live on. And within minutes, the fire was threatening houses. But through the valiant efforts of our local fire departments and mutual aid from neighboring fire departments, all of the residents' houses were saved. It is reassuring to see how people can come together in a time of need to support each other. Again, thank you to everyone that helped on that day. Opportunity for employee organizations to address the board. Marysville Unified Teachers Association. Angela?
Good evening, Mr. Rasmussen. Sorry for the delay there. Trying to multitask here a little bit. So to piggyback off of one of the comments that you just made before I get into the other comments that I have for this evening, once MUTA was made aware of the social media posts I believe you're referring to, we have made it clear that MUTA in no way was involved in the posts that were made. There was no celebrating that was going on, and nobody was with that person. The people from MUTA who were tagged in that played no role in it, no part in it whatsoever. As a result, though, we have severed that relationship with the CTA staff person who was involved in that. We are actually in the process now of CTA giving us a new staff person because of that. So we just would like to publicly put out there that our local had nothing to do with that. And for what it's worth, even though we did not play a part in it, I would like to, on behalf of MUTA, extend an apology to Mr. Cena first and foremost. But I would like him to also know that we didn't play a part in that. And when we were made aware of it, we issued an apology to our members. We did try to get word out as to that. But like Mr. Rasmussen just said, by then the damage was done. But we are also doing all we can to repair that. And like I said, we have severed that relationship and are now in the process of getting a new staff person. So in getting back to the comments for this evening, though, we have last week was the National Teacher Appreciation Week, and tomorrow is the California Day of the Teacher. And so in honor of last week and in honor of tomorrow's Day of the Teacher, I wanted to thank a few teachers who left an indelible mark in my life and helped make me who I am today, especially since I'm a product of area schools here. First off was Mr. Lebeck. He was my fifth grade teacher at King Avenue School and a man who inspired me to be a teacher. And also Mrs. Preston, who was my English teacher at Gray Avenue School and who really honestly taught me how to write and inspired me to do so and inspired me to then want to be an English teacher specifically. And yes, you do recognize the last name. And then, of course, Mr. Hall, he's my band teacher at Yuba City High School. And so for all of our music teachers out there, yep, music all the way. So he was amazing band teacher. And there are plenty more. But I mention this because I would like to encourage all of us, whether we are teachers, whether we're school board members, whether we are community members, whether we work at the district office or at one of our sites or at any other business in our community, I would like to encourage all of us that tomorrow to share stories of those teachers, the teachers that made an impression on us, that, you know, made us laugh, that inspired us, that encouraged us, that, you know, coached us, and in so many ways, sometimes even coached us up, and so much more. But I would just like to, you know, put that out there that especially after the year that we've had and after the year that teachers have had, if anybody can take just a few moments tomorrow to share with anybody, even if it's kind of talking to yourself, if you could just share with anybody out there a story of a teacher who did remarkable things for you, especially since I believe a lot of those are going to be products of our schools, teachers from our local schools. Along those lines, I also want to echo a sentiment that I heard from a board member also. I want to thank the teachers from Marysville High and Lyndhurst High for coming together for their conversation in regards to finding ways to support the success of our students. It was a powerful discussion and one that I was glad to see board members putting that out there and participating in that as well. So my thanks for that. And we had a number of people from the district office that were there in support of that as well. So appreciation around for that. And then last but by no means least, I want to thank the teachers of Marysville Joint Unified School District. We're about 500 strong, and they are 500 of the most talented, dedicated, amazing individuals I have ever come across. I do not have the words, even as an English teacher, And even as somebody who typically is not at a loss for words, I just do not have the words to adequately express my appreciation, my gratitude, my sincere thanks for their passion and their expertise, their tireless efforts, their caring hearts. They all truly inspire me and encourage me on a daily basis and multiple times during the day. And I'm not alone. They encourage and inspire countless others, both big and small and young and experienced, I think is a better word than the old word. So big and small, young and experienced. So thank you to all of the teachers for being the amazing individuals you are and giving your heart and soul and your blood, sweat, and tears for your students. Thank you so much, Mr. Rasmussen, and thank you to the board.
Thank you, Angela. I neglected to read a note here that I was supposed to read, so I'm going to do it now. To all our listeners joining by phone tonight, please note that you will be muted for a majority of the meeting. If you would like to unmute yourself to participate in the discussion, please press *6 on your phone. Please note that the meeting host may mute or unmute you during the meeting and that an announcement on your phone will let you know when that happens. Thank you. Next, we have Operating Engineers, Local Union Number 3.
Yes, good morning or good afternoon, President Rasmussen. My name is Felix Mario Huerta Jr. I'm the business agent assigned for the Operating Engineers, Local Union Number 3. As you can see, this is what COVID-19 has done to my face, and so it will shortly come off. I've had my second shots. I pledge to take it off on my daughter's 16th birthday, which is coming up on the 24th of this month. So I just wanted to let you know this will be the last time you publicly see my full beard. Thank you very much for allowing us to speak today. We did submit to you a document that kind of outlines the more detailed proposals that we submitted to your bargaining team 2 weeks ago. We wanted just to make a point that we really need to look at the salaries that we have for our employees. I pointed out in a communication to you today that in our current salary schedule, which is technically a year old, it's the 18-19 salary schedule, we have a range 7 salary schedule that starts at $14.20 an hour for entry-level clerical position. And as you all know, the minimum wage in California right now is $14 an hour. So we are having one classification in our unit making 20 cents more an hour than minimum wage, and we really need to address that. As you know, in January of 2022, it goes up to $15 an hour, and so our proposal for the entry-level positions is to try to address that inadequacy that exists. One of the stories that I shared at the bargaining table the other day is we had a stewards training on March 5th. It was a Saturday stewards training, and we had volunteers participating. We had somebody from Marysville Unified School District who was interested in being a shop steward. She participated all day. A couple of days later, she called me to say that she was very happy that she was able to participate, but unfortunately, she could not be a shop steward at this time. And she relayed this story to me about the fact that unfortunately, her partner, her husband, passed away a couple of years ago. The fact that she had since then had lost the house that they lived in and was technically homeless when she told me on or about March 7th. And, I relayed this story to your bargaining team to say it is something that we have to do to try to help our lowest wage workers to try to make ends meet. I know that you guys have done a tremendous job of trying to keep up with the cost of living in your area. But we still have folks that are struggling on a day-to-day basis. We have some folks that are making 3.5 hours of work a week, a day. And so that really is a really small amount of time that they have to work for you. But unfortunately, as I said, with the pandemic, with circumstances that took place, it was just unfortunate that she was unable to participate given the fact that she was homeless. And so if there's anything that we can do to help the least among us, we really need to try. And so our proposal is to try to raise that minimum wage for the entry-level staff at the very beginning of our salary schedule. You've all seen the documents. I hope you have a chance to review them. And with that, of course, is the compounding effect of the salary schedule itself. When you look at the cost of living increase in California, pre-pandemic, post-pandemic, I know that we are provided resources from the state, but we really need to look at that entry-level wage for our folks. So thank you very much. I appreciate your time.
Thank you, Mr. Huerta. California School Employees Association, number 326 and 648. Association of Management and Confidential Employees. Dr. Greco?
Good evening. We have no comments this evening. Thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you. Supervisory Unit. Next, we have public comments. Note for teleconference meetings, please submit your public comment cards to the district on the district webpage at www.mjusd.com under board before the board meeting begins. Persons wishing to address the board are requested to fill out a public comment card before the meeting and give it to the secretary, board president, or superintendent. Public may address topics not on the agenda during this section of the agenda, or they may be heard, or they may ask that they be heard at the specific agenda item. Comments are limited to a maximum of 3 minutes per speaker, 20 minutes total time for public input on each item per Board Bylaw 9323. The Ralph and Brown Act prevents the Board of Trustees from responding to these comments with the exception of clarifying questions. California Government Code Section 54954.2.A states, no action or discussion shall be undertaken on any item not appearing on the posted agenda, except that members of a legislative body or staff may briefly respond to statements made or questions posed by persons exercising their public testimony rights under Section 54954.3. We do have a number of public comments tonight, and we also have some public comments that have been submitted asking me to read them for the author, which I will do tonight. But in the future, I feel that the message is much more powerful if it comes from the author themselves, other than having someone else read it. Thank you. Our first public comment is Jessica Moslin. Jessica? No, Jessica? Okay, so I'm going to go ahead and read what she has here. As a follow-up from my public comment on 42721, explaining how mandating masks without providing informed consent is illegal, I would like to educate the board and the community about the research available regarding continuous mask wearing. I have many concerns regarding the safety and efficacy of our children being forced to wear masks for multiple hours a day, multiple days a week. We are not following the science, as touted by many people in the community. I also ask that the mask policy currently in place for students and staff be added to the next board meeting agenda for open discussion. Sincerely, Jessica Molson, BSNRN. Next, we have Kimberly Davis. Is Kimberly there?
Yes, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Okay, thank you. Okay, I am back to speak about the track at the Marysville High School. I am begging you guys, we need a new track. It is 97 years old. If it were a building, it would be condemned, and we are allowing our children to run around a 97-year-old building, per se. It is a classroom. It is an unsafe classroom. It cannot be used in bad weather. So especially during the pandemic when, you know, we have to social distance, you would have to cram these kids into an auditorium. You can't do that. If they had a new usable track they would still be able to use it in inclement weather. It is unfair of the board to allow this track to be in this condition for as many years as it has. Our children are being failed. It is not fair. They deserve a new track. They deserve a safe place to run, participate in PE, to be proud of. We cannot, the track team can't host meets because it is unsafe. The school is losing revenue because they can't host meets. They are the only team at Marysville High School that is technically homeless. They cannot be proud of their school because they cannot invite others to participate at their school. So I'm begging you guys, this is the perfect time of year. Summer's coming. Let's get the ball rolling. We need a new track. I will be back every meeting until it happens. Thank you.
Thank you, Mrs. Davis. Mr. Carrion, I forgot to check with you at the beginning. We're okay. Thank you. Next, we have Andrea Tarwater. Andrea?
Can you guys hear me?
Yes, we can. Thank you.
Can you hear me? Okay,
yes,
perfect.
Go ahead.
Okay, I would like to also second what I think her name was Jessica said about the mask mandate. I'm a mother of three kids in the Marysville School District, and I've seen my kids in the last few weeks go from great excitement at being able to go back to school and see their teachers and friends, and now they're coming home sad and upset because they are getting called out for not having their mask on outside or not having it pulled up over their nose. The emotional harm far outweighs any good that the masks are doing to our kids outside, especially. They need to be able to breathe. One of my children suffers nosebleeds, and all of them suffer headaches from wearing these masks for 4 hours each school day. Even people seated indoors at restaurants can remove their masks. Why can't our kids remove their masks when they're seated at their desk? Please let our kids breathe. Make masks a choice and not a mandate. Vaccines make the excuse of wearing a mask to protect others not a reason. It's not a valid reason anymore. People can get vaccines if they want them. Or those who are afraid of unmasking their kids can continue to learn virtually. But our kids need a return to normal. And I would also request that you guys bring it to public discussion. And thank you so much for your time.
Thank you, Ms. Tarwater. Next, we have Jennifer Bramer. Jennifer?
Can you see me?
Yes, we can. Jennifer, go right ahead.
Good evening, Superintendent Cena and members of the board. I am Jennifer Bramer, and I'm a student support specialist at Yuba Gardens, as well as a parent of an eighth grader at McKinney and a senior at Marysville High School. At the last board meeting, we heard from teachers expressing their concerns about eighth grade promotion requirements. I would like to give a different perspective. My job at YG includes helping failing students create plans to improve grades and educating them with tools and skills to succeed. I would like to advocate for these students. MJUSD has been working this year to improve equity for all students. When the school moved to distance learning, staff lost the ability to provide equity. We could not provide equity in the students' living environment. We cannot provide equity in the students' parent involvement. Although we tried, we cannot provide equity in all technological challenged areas. And lastly, we cannot provide equity with transportation. In a normal school year, teachers would spend the first month building relationships with students. This would happen through eye contact and smiles, classroom interactions and group work, and I notice statements such as, I notice you're wearing an A's hat. Do you like baseball? This year, teachers do not know what some of their students look like due to blank screens and cohort C. Teachers and staff didn't build a good sense of who every student was and what motivated them. Students didn't have the opportunity to work in groups and learn from each other. I am what the district would consider a good parent, the kind that shows up, keeps in contact, and stays on top of my children's education. I struggled as a parent. I didn't understand how my eighth grader could be failing classes and what exactly was going on. It was difficult for him to lose contact with friends for so long, and as well as he lost, and all he lost in eighth grade. He lost the opportunity to run for a leadership and be a big man on campus, the opportunity to play eighth grade basketball and watch his friends play their sports, and the opportunity to make new friends. The sadness over every quarter or every season and the loss of a particular event kept him a typical overachiever in a funk that was difficult to shake. I would like to leave you with the positive things students learned this year. Students learned how to navigate their Chromebooks, improving their typing skills, to split their screens and view two tabs at the same time, to use Zoom and Google Meet, how to chat, raise their hand, share their screen. Students learned new educational tools and apps and how to become competent in using Google Classroom, Calendar, and Aries. And they have worked independently.
Thank you, Mrs. Bramer. Your time is up, but thank you very much for your comments.
Tonight, I urge you to vote yes on tonight's board policy 6146, allowing students with a 1.0.
Mrs. Bramer, your time is up. Thank you. Next, we have Petra Campos. This is one that's asking me to read. This is in regards to the COVID protocol at Edgewater Elementary. Three of my four kids go to Edgewater, and we have kept them, and we have kept all of them in distance learning until last week when we decided to make the switch to in-person learning. We decided to make the switch based on how well Mrs. Guy and the whole staff at Edgewater are doing in regards to upholding the COVID protocols. The only reason they are back in school and so happy to be back in school is because how safe we feel sending them and that the safety protocols will be followed. It's not just for show. My husband and I really appreciate that. Next, we have Shauna Supat. Shauna? No, Shauna? Next we have Ayana Hansen. And again, it's one they're asking me to read. Topic, a 7-period schedule with intervention is the one intervention schedule that MHS teachers do not want. This would decrease quality education time and decrease teachers' preps while adding an extra class to teach, meaning you would be increasing the workload while decreasing teachers' ability to develop and work on the curriculum, grade, and prepare. MHS teachers do want intervention, as we have completed phase 1 and 2 of the PLC process. If we were to move forward with an intervention schedule, it would need to be with a 6-period schedule. We need time to research and collect data on where to place the intervention period, intervention during a 6-period day in order for it to be successful. We want our intervention to be data-driven and not turn into a study hall. Again, I have another one from Jeff Freeman. Topic, per the research and data collected at Marysville High School, which is very limited, our staff would like to see a 6-period with 1 to 2 data-driven interventions per week. A 7-period day with 4 interventions per week, not data-driven, is not a schedule we believe will be beneficial for our students. There is no data for a 7-period day with intervention. There is data for 7 or 8-period block, but not 7 periods every day with intervention. The 7-period day idea seems reactionary to the outlier year 2021 data, and not from 2017 through 2019, which would be more telling in regards to student needs. This proposal does not appear very well researched or presented. Again, I would ask the public, I think it is much more powerful if you can read these yourselves. Next, we have Jessica Leeper. Jessica, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Go right ahead, Jessica.
I spoke at the last meeting in regards to the change in 8th grade promotion requirements. Tonight, I'd just like to reiterate a few main points for the board to consider. As far as I'm aware, there remains a proposal to promote all 8th graders, whether or not they meet the promotion requirements. My argument is that this is detrimental to their education and antithetical to the district's mission statement to educate today's youth for tomorrow's world. The students who have not achieved a 2.0 this school year are not prepared for high school. How could they be? They did not show up for the 8th grade. If they are promoted, it would be akin to promoting a 7th grader. Effective teachers meet their students where they are academically. 8th graders that do not have a 2.0 lack the behavioral skills to be successful in the traditional school setting. We should not give up on them, but we absolutely should teach them how to stay focused, show up to class, participate in class discussions, and turn in work. These behaviors can be taught and practiced anywhere, but are most effective in a smaller setting like what community day school provides. I fear that if these students progress onto the high school, they will only be lost in the mix of other students who have these skills in place and have attended and participated in the 8th grade. The cycle of failure will continue until it is adequately addressed. Now is the time to address this failure, not later when these students may just simply drop out. So please, follow the mission statement for the district and truly prepare all of our students for tomorrow. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Leeper. Next, I have a public comment card from Felix Huerta. Felix, were you wanting to talk during this portion? Mr. Huerta? I guess not. Next, we have the superintendent's report. Mr. Cena?
Yes. Together, serving every student every day in every way. This is a very busy time of year. We're navigating our way amid COVID, finishing up this school year and planning for next year. And throughout our journey, our COVID journey, we've had 4 goals: to slow the spread, COVID-19, ensure the health and safety of students and staff, maintain relationships, and facilitate student learning and growth. MJUSD is a special place. Our students, so many of them, over 80%, come with chronic, challenging struggles that they're working through at all times. And so in order to meet their needs and to help them learn and grow, people who work most directly with them have to give so much of themselves. And last week was celebrating teachers, and tomorrow is California's Day of the Teacher, May 12th. I just want to thank the teachers who work selflessly and tirelessly to dig so deep to make that connection with students amid COVID, and and help lift and help kids learn no matter what the challenge is. This week, it's honoring classified employees. And no matter who we are, no matter what role we play, all the people that are tuned in tonight, all of our roles are to channel and funnel to create opportunities for a student and teacher to engage and to establish that relationship. That's where students learn. And so tonight, I just want to thank all classified staff in terms of where people, if you're working at all with managing the money and resources that help finance any of these programs and facilities and equipment, if you're involved in the hiring process, getting people in position to pour their soul to contribute and share, if you're making sure that people are getting paid and cared for, that's allows those teachers to work with students. If you're supplying the facilities, if you're working to supply equipment, materials, that creates the environment. If you are contributing every day, come to school or come to work in order to help create a clean, safe, and healthy environment for students and teachers, thank you. All of the people that work every day to transport students to get this student here so that they can have that opportunity, and feeding students during COVID this past week, the team, the nutrition team in all levels, so many of them classified employees, 2.1 million meals served to students and families. If you're working providing the best professional development and instructional resource and guidance and support to help teachers armed and to teach students, thank you. If you're making sure that special needs are met and special populations are included, thank you. If you're making sure that at the sites, if you're making sure that students are at school every day and making those visits and those connections and monitoring whether that interaction is taking place and doing everything you can to channel it, thank you. If you're providing leadership and structure and support at the school sites, again, thanking you for creating this central piece that we all have a hand in and a purpose. And if you're in the classroom, if you're a classified person who's actually in the classroom assisting teachers in this process, thank you. So to everyone, a definition of leadership is making other people successful. And so to the classified staff, thank you for your leadership every day in every way, helping create this and helping help make that magic happen between teachers and students. Facilitating learning tonight, just looking at the board agenda, previewing the agenda, thank you to the board. I hope that approve the early literacy block grant, the expanded timeline that's in the consent agenda. In terms of maintaining relationships with COVID, coming out of COVID, I hope that the board tonight will approve the purchase of Toolbox for summer school and also starting for next year so that students and teachers at the elementary level have skills to help identify social emotional hurdles and strategies to help work themselves and to help others work through it. Just a shout out to the movement of conscious discipline that's happening throughout the district. Currently, there are tens of teachers, hundreds of classified staff, all the preschool staff and students, and all administrators are all studying conscious discipline to, again, that as we come out of COVID, it is needed before COVID, but coming out of COVID, the added stresses and social and emotional needs that people need to be equipped to handle themselves and to help each other. It's inspiring to see people learning and growing in that way. Ensuring health and safety today, those of you who keep an eye on the COVID-19 dashboard, you'll see that we met orange tier numbers this week, Yuba County, a case rate of 5.0, which means that if Yuba County achieves orange level numbers that Yuba County could enter the orange tier as early as a week from tomorrow. Also ensuring health and safety with an eye on next year. Today, the FDA approved vaccinations for students aged 12 to 15. And so in partnership with the Yuba County Public Health, the Department of Health and Human Services, and OptumServe, our district's going to host three clinics to help students get vaccinated and community. It'll be this Sunday at Foothill Intermediate from 10 to 7. Also on May 20th at Lyndhurst High School from 10 to 7. And then on Friday, excuse me, May 21st at Marysville High School from 10 to 7. Encouraging people to get vaccinated as a way to ensure more opportunities for next year. Also tonight, facilitating learning, bringing before the board, looking that when we Yuba County does go into the orange tier, that allowing secondary students the opportunity to attend school 4 days in person. And then for next year, following the science, the data, and vaccinations, COVID testing, and health and safety protocols, including masks, that next year, 5 days, full instructional days, instruction. And so an example of these components all coming together today, we also received official notice that the Marysville Charter Academy for the Arts, a couple meetings ago, I reported that they had, MCAA had been chosen as a distinguished school for the third time in its 20-year history. Today, official notice that MCAA has been named an exemplary school, one of only 33 in the state of California, and that the visiting committee was so impressed that they're providing funding to the MCAA to be a demonstration site for other schools to see how not only teaching the arts, but integrating with disciplines and helping students' academic performance improve. Planning for next year, thank you to all stakeholders who are watching the LCAP video, a 14-minute video on the LCFF process and our local control accountability plan, and also for taking the survey to provide input on ideas selected there to help improve student learning and growth. Very soon, the governor's going to come out with revised budget, and so we'll be learning about that and gearing up for next year in terms of the funding and a circumstance. And so all of these elements working together to serve every student every day in every way.
Thank you, Mr. Cena. Next, we have the approval of minutes. Minutes from the regular board meeting of 4/27/21. Is there any discussion regarding the minutes? If not, I'll entertain a motion.
Motion to approve.
Motion to approve by Trustee Crawford. Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Trustee Davis. Roll call vote. Trustee Davis?
Yes.
Trustee Crawford?
Yes.
Trustee Boom?
Yes.
Trustee Doug Criddle?
Yes.
Trustee Hasty?
Yes.
Trustee Gary Criddle?
Yes.
Trustee Rasmussen? Yes. Motion carries 7 yes. Next, we have the consent agenda. Are there any items on the consent agenda that a board member would like to have pulled? Not hearing any, I'll entertain a motion.
Motion to approve
by Trustee Davis. Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Trustee Doug Criddle. Roll call vote. Trustee Davis?
Yes.
Trustee Crawford?
Yes.
Trustee Boom?
Yes.
Trustee Doug Criddle?
Yes.
Trustee Hasty?
Yes.
Trustee Gary Criddle?
Yes.
Trustee Rasmussen, yes. Motion carries, 7 yes. Under new business, number one, Board of Trustees, superintendent selection process and option. The board will discuss the process of selecting a replacement superintendent for the district in light of the recent retirement announcement by Superintendent Gary Cena, effective 6/30/21. This is a discussion item. I would hope that the board members had the opportunity to listen to our previous board meetings that I'd sent out that information back in 2019 of kind of where we were in this process. And what I'd like to do is to kind of run through what the different processes are, and then we can come back and try to elaborate on each one of those. So there are three processes that the board can utilize for searching for a new superintendent. The first one is appointment. The board may appoint a person to be the new superintendent, so appointment. A local search, the board may select to do a local search, try to keep it somewhat close within house, within district, but as we heard, we'll explain that when we get there, but a local search, smaller. Then the third one would be a statewide or a national search. The board may select to do a much larger search, hire a firm to come in and help us with that process. As we review each of these processes, I would ask the board members' input, not as to which process that they would like, but to help me with the explanations of each one of these processes. The first would be by the appointment. The board would meet in closed session and discuss a candidate that the board may want to move forward in the process of being the superintendent. They could vote on that person in the appointment process. If that person received a majority of votes, then he or she would be the next superintendent. Is there anything else that somebody would like to add to that statement or description or?
No, but the only thing is, if you're going to do an appointment, how do you know that that person wants to be appointed?
Exactly. Yeah. We ran into that last time, huh, Jeff?
We did.
So the second one then is the local search. And this is actually the process the board chose to do last time. Mr. Rick Teagarden first volunteered, then subsequently the district hired Mr. Teagarden to help us run the search. He interviewed the board, got questions. The first things that we actually had to do is to meet in closed session with the board and to discuss the non-economic terms for the superintendent's contract. Before we could advertise, we had to have some type of a contract to be able to put out there. So we met and then discussed that. Then once we come up with the non-economic terms, because the economic terms for the superintendent has to be done in open session, and we have to have a superintendent to do that. Then the board did meet in closed session, took a vote on the non-economic terms for the superintendent's contract. So we got that settled. Developed some interview questions. The district then advertised and collected applications. The board then conducted 4 rounds of interviews with candidates. Then a superintendent was selected. Any additions to that process that we had that time? And then the third would be the statewide or national search, where we would hire a firm to come in and help us do that. And Mr. Carrion, if you could please help us with that explanation. And I do want to thank you, Romero, for the short turnaround. I sent Romero an email yesterday morning trying to gather that information for us that we had taken a look at last time. So, Mr. Carrion.
Yes, thank you very much. Ultimately, depending on the approach, certainly if the board elects to cast a wider net, whether it's a statewide search or a national search, there are a number of reputable firms out there that are able, willing, and ready to assist. There are a number of local districts currently engaged in that process and using firms that have the experience level to conduct a much wider search. In 2019, I engaged a number of the arguably more reputable and certainly well-known firms. They submitted proposals, and in the event that the district was willing to entertain the services of some of those groups or any of those groups, we were at the ready to engage. Hearing from President Rasmussen, I engaged four of those well-known and reputable firms and had asked them to consider providing a proposal in the event that we're ready, making no commitments and no promises, of course, that we would enlist their services. One has already submitted to us a proposal, and the other three have said that they will have proposals ready by the end of the week, if not sooner. So ultimately, again, it depends on the casting of the net, and all of those firms will also conduct much smaller local searches. One of the nearby district is conducting a narrower search, but still using a reputable, bigger firm. Since they engaged in that process in January and their superintendent is leaving, even at this point, they will go back to that particular firm, but they will conduct a smaller, more narrow search. I will tell you that in 2019, those four bigger firms generated proposals ranging from $17,000 to $26,000. That was at 2019 dollars. I would expect that they would probably come in at 15 to 20% more given 2 years later. But pleasantly surprised that the firm that did respond the quickest hadn't increased their fee quite as much as I had initially anticipated. But more to the point, all of these national firms, some of them, one of them is housed outside of California. The other three are within California. They all undertake, regardless of the size of the search, local, smaller, more narrower, or larger, they will undergo a process of 5 to 9 steps. Everything from, of course, meeting with the board, developing characteristics of the ideal superintendent that the board, the community, the stakeholders would like, involve the community through the various phases and levels of participation and input, in addition to, of course, the recruitment process, the background checking. As I said, there are some as scaled back as to 5 phases and some as in-depth as to 9 phases. But certainly from the standpoint, they're all very similar. They're all very thorough. Because of their reputation, they're widely used. Many of them are engaged in national searches for other executives, not just district superintendents or CBOs, but certainly are in the business of finding executives in other branches of industry. And the price varies. And so ultimately, it's the pleasure of the board to decide the scope of the search, and then ultimately whether or not a search firm would be contacted to ultimately request services from that firm.
I think I'm turned on. Oh, thank you, Mr. Williams. once you get those other quotes, maybe you could send that, those packets to the board members. Would that be possible so they could preview?
Absolutely. Okay. Yes, sir. I will endeavor to do that as they arrive.
Thank you. Board members.
Yeah. So Mr. Kirion, if you do a statewide or a national search and say you get 15 candidates, do they do the paper screening? The people that,
they will do the initial paper screening and then come back to the board by committee to, recommend who they would interview based on a preliminary background, based on the strength of their packets, and ultimately in connection with that preliminary background, the success behind each of the candidates will be communicated to the board so that they're not making the sole decision as to who is to be interviewed. They certainly would make a recommendation, but would leave it to the board to provide input in the event that someone else not selected by the firm would also be included in that interview process.
Other board members, do we have questions or comments? Or
I guess my comment is that we were very fortunate to get Mr. Teagarden to help the board and the district through our last selection. And I just wonder, has anybody reached out to Mr. Teagarden to see if he's even available or even wants to do that job again?
Well, I know that I have not, Mr. Davis. I do know last time that Mr. Teagarden reached out to us, but I have not reached out to him. I certainly could if that's the wish of the board.
And may I remind the board that the magnanimous gesture of Mr. Teagarden was upon hearing that the board wanted to conduct a local search. Don't know if keep in mind that these search firms are fully staffed and well equipped to garner and receive as much of the product that is submitted. It could be that Mr. Teagarden would prepare himself for a much wider search as well. I don't know to say, but I know that upon hearing that the board wanted to conduct a search, then he provided a voluntary service for the community and then ultimately led to our fortune to have him involved.
I do want to tell the board that Dr. Revelis from Yuba County Office of Education did reach out to me and said that he would be helpful in any way that we thought he could help. So I see Mr. Gant, are you still on in service?
I am. I am monitoring, yes.
Okay. I saw you on there. I wonder if you could help us just a little bit with Jeff's question. It arose 2 years ago when we were talking about the appointment process. How do you ever know if when the board members get in a room and they throw out a name, how do you know if that person's even willing or wanting? Or can you give us some guidance on maybe how that would go?
Well, I mean, truthfully, you know, and at the initial stage, I don't know that you do. It's not probably a good idea to have board members out amongst the public doing one-on-one outreach early on in that process. I think it can lead to some misunderstandings. Not necessarily, obviously not intentional, but those people who get contacted may be under the impression that a board member speaking for a larger group or the board as a whole. So you have to be very cautious of those things. I think that what you like to do in that kind of a circumstance, if you're going to avoid the search firm, you're going to go with more of a board-driven process, is to have that discussion amongst board members early on. If names are going to be raised, that can be a proper closed session item because those names should only be discussed confidentially amongst board members. And then perhaps having a small committee that would be assigned to go out and actually perhaps canvass the interest of those individuals so that you could develop perhaps a handful of potential candidates. and then move the next process forward from there.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Gant. Do we have any other questions or from board members? No. Thank you, Mr. Gant. Is there, does anybody have another process that they've heard about or thought about or want to propose or for us to take a look at? Okay. So the next item of business would be when we need to pick one of those, A, B, or C. Do y'all want to wait till our next scheduled board meeting, I think on the 25th of the month? Do we want to have a special board meeting to try to come together with that item to be able to pick one of those? What's the pleasure of the board?
I would rather wait.
Wait until the May 25th, Allison?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
I just had a quick question. Mr. Rasmussen, what's the typical time frame that this takes? I mean, that's a loaded question, but
yeah.
Is there anybody that can give us some insight to what yeah. we'd be looking at?
Yeah.
Actually, if you conduct a wider search, you're going to need every bit of 2 months in order to complete a thorough process. If it's a local search, then perhaps less time. But I think certainly to give a posting sufficient time for interested candidates to see it, consider it, put together a packet, and then ultimately for the search firm or even a local in order to ensure that all candidates have sufficient time to consider and become candidates and not just ultimately last minute throw their hat in the ring. There are approximately, the last count, 20 superintendent vacancies north of San Jose. So you can imagine the competition. Those are far and well ahead of the pace at this particular time. I know that because they're posted. And so whether they're local or whether they're a wider net that was cast, they're certainly in the throes of that process now and have been posted for upwards of 3 to 4 months.
So I don't have, I was trying to think, and Lisa gave me the information, but I didn't bring it with me. Does anybody remember kind of when we hired Mr. Teagarden? Was that beginning of May, or are we thinking middle May or April?
I think it was May.
May. So I do have some dates that, so it looked like the initial screening, and again, there was a lot of work done prior to the initial screening, but the initial screening was done on June 4th. And then the first interview or first round of interviews was June 11th. The second round of interviews was June 14th. Third round was June 18th. June 20 was the fourth round of interviews. And then June 25 was the contract for the new superintendent. So June was a pretty busy month at that particular time. But again, there was quite a bit of leeway time, I think, for the advertising portion and trying to get all the interview questions and that together. So it would be, you know, trying to have somebody in place by June 30, I don't think seems very realistic.
No, but like Mr. Carrion said, the sooner we move on this, the better. I don't think we can wait 2 weeks to decide which way we're going to go, because if we're going to do a statewide search or a national search, your better candidates are already going to be gone. I mean, they're already being picked off the top. So if we're going to do something, I think we need to come up with an answer sooner rather than later, because like I say, you're going to start losing candidates. Would you say, Mr. Carrion, there was 20 north of San Jose? So that's a lot of candidates. So I don't believe that we should wait till the 25th. I think we need to meet again, and it shouldn't take long. We're just going to give direction. If that's the direction we're going to go, we need to give ourselves as much time as possible to be able to get one of the you know, better candidates.
And I agree with Jeff on the need to be expeditious as possible. This is a grinding process. And what I am concerned about, especially after Mr. Terran Center's 20 and probably more that haven't even been posted. And I would certainly suggest that we need to, I would suggest a statewide search. I don't know if we need to approach somebody right away about how to organize it, but I think the board needs to move forward. And I agree with Jeff. It, 2 weeks is, we're still going to approve a bunch of steps yet after we make the decision that, about which process we use.
I would go ahead and also agree with Jeff on this because yeah. The clock's running. We're losing out on potential good candidates per se. And plus looking at the situation that the current district and board is sitting in, this new person coming in is only going to have a matter of weeks to get, you know, hit the ground running before August and the school starts and they got to get going. So the faster we can jump on it, I think the better.
So Mr. Gant, I'd like to ask you a question with regards to process.
Okay.
Do we need to have a formal vote? It's not an agendized item, so I don't see how we can do that. But can we just give on this item of trying to when to have the next meeting, can we do a consensus vote by board members and be able to say we want to have one next week or?
Yes, the board can give direction to staff to schedule a board meeting without it being a specific agenda item. That is one of the recognized exceptions is the ability of the board to request staff to schedule a meeting.
Okay, thank you very much, Mr. Gant.
You're welcome.
So I think it would be important to try to get the information that Mr. Carrion is currently working on. And if we could get that, you know, by the end of the week, I think then maybe that's going to give people time to digest it and see what they have. And if it's okay with staff or with the board, then I would get with staff. And if we could try to look at the early part of the next week. Okay. Well, like I say, we'll tentatively plan that then, and I'll get with staff to make sure that that's okay with their schedules. Okay. Thank you very much.
Yeah, board members probably need to check their schedules too and make sure that works for everybody. But that's what I brought my calendar with me to make sure because I knew we were going to run into this tonight. So.
Yeah.
I have a question.
Go right ahead.
I agree. We need to get the very best candidate possible. And I don't want to wait to get the best candidate possible. That's not my point. My caution in jumping too quickly is, or my reason for saying let's wait till the next meeting is why does the superintendent have to be here in August? I mean, obviously we want the best as soon as possible, but they're not the ones in the classroom.
Any comments, board members? I would only say, Allison, I do think that there's got to be a lot of direction, I think, given for when we're starting the school year. And I think somebody needs to be there to give that direction, I would think.
I had a question. Would that fall under as a contingency if, and Allison's got a good point, and we're looking to try to find the right person, is there an interim that needs to take place then, or do we wait until August or whenever that time happens? How does that come into play?
I guess the board certainly could look for an interim. Mr. Cena has expressed to me that he would be willing to stay and help with the transition. You know, if it went till December, that might not be the story, but he said he was very willing to help until we find a replacement. Hopefully I'm not talking for you, Mr. Cena, but we.
No, I'm willing to help. I'm committed to helping any way I can, including especially with the transition.
Yeah, that's my caution. I don't want to just grab somebody and think, oh, we're desperate, we've got to take them, when they're not necessarily the best fit.
Right.
Yeah, I don't believe that, you know, you jump to anything and do anything quickly, you know, don't jump to conclusions or whatever, but you want to get started in the process so that candidates are still available. The longer we wait in the process, the more candidates are going to be gone. That's my theory. We still, you know, if it takes 2, 3, 4 months, we don't, you know, do something that we're going to regret later. We right. still want to do our due diligence, but we got to get started sooner rather than later is my concern. But thanks, Allison.
I understood that we were going to decide tonight whether to try to stay local or whether to go with a company. And so I thought, well, if we're not going to have the information from the various companies for several days, how are we going to choose?
No, I'm sorry if I misled you, but tonight's only a discussion item.
Okay.
We're not taking any action.
Okay.
And what we would do at our next, it sounds like a special board meeting, we could review those three items. We would have the information from Mr. Carrion, and then the board would make a decision on which one of those three processes that they
okay.
want to.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. So I will get with Mr. Cena and see if Tuesday would work. Okay. Thank you very much. Personnel Services, number one, Resolution 2020-21/23, California Day of the Teachers. Purpose of the agenda item is to request the board approve the resolution regarding California Day of the Teacher. Do we have staff to talk on that?
Ultimately, we just simply want to recognize the importance and the value of the employee that serves as a teacher. To the extent that the past week was the Teacher Appreciation Week, and more importantly, that we want to continue our recognition, but now do it much more publicly in the form of this resolution, that all of us, as was stated earlier, have fond memories of a teacher, multiple teachers who helped us persevere, who helped us set a direction in our path and our journey to where we are now, and maybe took other turns. But ultimately, the recognition of a teacher or teachers and distinguishing the value of what they do to our students and our families, our community, we will simply want to, through this resolution, recognize them collectively through this Day of the Teacher.
Thank you, Mr. Carrion. Any discussion? I'll entertain a motion.
Motion to approve.
Motion to approve by Gary Criddle.
Because I'm a teacher.
Second.
There you go.
He's a teacher too.
Second by Trustee Crawford.
You got you jump quick, Gary.
Roll call vote. Trustee Davis.
Yes.
Trustee Crawford.
Yes.
Trustee Boom.
Yes.
Trustee Doug Criddle.
Yes.
Trustee Hasty.
Yes.
Trustee Gary Criddle.
Yes.
Trustee Rasmussen, yes. Motion carries, 7 yes. Business Services, Resolution 2020-21/24, to establish an associate student body ASB Special Revenue Fund. The purpose of the agenda item is to request the board approve the resolution to establish an associate student body ASB Special Revenue Fund. Mrs. Lossing?
Thank you, Board President Rasmussen. Good evening, members of the Governing Board, Superintendent Cena. This resolution is, frankly, a requirement based on the Governmental Accounting Standards Board, also known as GASB. They have a new rule, number 84, and according to that rule, it's going to be necessary for school districts to move their associated student body ASB funds into the financial statements. I think basically as a more oversight, the way it's handled here at MJUSD, our fiscal services department does a really outstanding job of monitoring, reviewing the independent auditors each year, review all of our ASB fund accounting that's handled at our school sites that generates revenue from our students' fundraisers. So this will create another fund in our financial statements, which will be reported the four times a year that we do formal budget updates to the board. The actual money will remain in the bank accounts established from each of the school sites, but the amounts will be carried into the district's financial statements for reporting. And again, the intent seems to be for all school districts to have more oversight. I don't feel that this school district needed any additional, but we're caught up in the entire GASB number 84 just to be compliant with it. So that's why we're asking you to, if you'll remember, when we talk about our budget the four times a year, with the official reports, we're generally talking about Fund 01, the general fund. But then we have all the other funds that are all held at the county treasurer's office. And those other funds are like the cafeteria fund. We have the child development fund, our capital facilities funds, and so on. This will become one of those without actual money in it. It'll just be numbers. But you'll see that reporting along with all the others.
Thank you, Mrs. Lossing. Mm-hmm. Questions or comments? Is there a motion?
Motion to approve.
Motion to approve by Trustee Boom. Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Trustee Davis. Roll call vote. Trustee Davis?
Yes.
Trustee Crawford?
Yes.
Trustee Boom?
Yes.
Doug Criddle?
Yes.
Trustee Hasty?
Yes.
Trustee Gary Criddle?
Yes.
Trustee Rasmussen? Yes. Motion carries 7 yes.
Thank you.
One time I was trying to do it without my cheat sheet and I messed up. Buildings and Grounds Department. Approval of lease-back guaranteed maximum price for the Arboga Elementary School expansion conversion to a TK 8 school project. Project number 8196. The purpose of the agenda item is request the board approve the lease-back guaranteed maximum price, GMP, in the amount not to exceed $17,108,691 for the Arboga Elementary School expansion conversion to a TK 8 school, and authorize award of contract and issuance of notice to proceed contingent upon staff and district legal counsel's completion of and satisfaction with the final contract documents. Mrs. Lossing?
Director of Buildings and Grounds, Travis Barnett, is here, and we have the gentleman from Core Construction here to also discuss the guaranteed maximum price, which, as you can see, is higher than what we anticipated. I will tell you that our legal counsel has been in review of the documentation required and is fully satisfied with that. So once we complete the board approval process, then we'll be able to complete the contract documents with signature. But in I would like to now turn it over to Director Barnett.
Yes, thank you, Penny. So this evening, we're looking at, obviously we see that the project has come in quite significantly higher than anticipated. We'd like to go over, we have CORE with us today, to kind of review and kind of walk us through in the board, the public, how we kind of arrived at such a higher cost of this project. Just for clarification, we wanted to ensure that everyone understood escalation prices, where we started with the project, where we ended up, and be able to answer any questions you might have regarding this project. Obviously, we've seen a huge increase in the price. The scope hasn't changed. We've really tried to do as much value engineering on this project as possible. So With that being said, I'm going to go ahead and turn it over to Matt, who's with CORE, and we're going to kind of walk you through the process and also how we came with the guaranteed maximum price, just so everybody understands, you know, what that process involved, how many bidders we had on this, and just so everybody feels comfortable with understanding where we ended up with that guaranteed maximum price. So with that, I think we can turn it over to CORE.
Yeah, good evening, everybody. Thanks for this opportunity. Thanks, Travis. Appreciate that. I'm going to try to share my screen here and make sure everything works here. And it says host disabled participant screen sharing. So maybe I can't share it right now. There we go. Okay, I don't know if everybody can see my screen. I'll take that as a yes. Yeah, like Travis said, we came to a guaranteed maximum price a couple weeks ago, and we're going to kind of go through the history of that and where we came about the price and what we did and the process we took. So I'm going to try to make this work. All right, we're going to do it a little differently here. Apologize. So we'll go over the schedule overview. We'll also go over the trade, the cost estimate history, our trade partner history, and some of the measures we took, some of the participation that we had, which was very, very productive. Our analysis and significant factors that went into the bidding process and our results of all our bids. And then open that up to any questions and answers. So a little timeline, back in July 24th, 2020, we submitted our winning proposal to be awarded the lease-leaseback contractor, your choice. We jumped right in to look at a 100% design development drawing estimate. So that's the very first phase of design. So it's kind of a low level design. It doesn't have a lot of detail yet, but it has the program, it has the understanding, and it has enough to quantify, you know, the project. Then we went into a 50% construction drawing design. That was the next step in the next phase design. That was in October. And then in December, we did a 95% construction drawings design, which, you know, has a lot more detail. It is at the point where it's almost ready to go into DSA for approval, and that's the agency that approves our documents for construction. So at that point, we started the bidding process. We started soliciting, and we'll get into kind of that 12 step of what we did, and then here we are today with our guaranteed maximum price that we're presenting. So that kind of gives you a little bit about the history of what happened, you know, in the past as of today. Moving forward in the future, you know, you can see that construction, we're eager to start here at the beginning of June and finish for the school year of 2022-2023 in August. In our cost estimate history, we take a 12-step process. We do a lot of research. We identify a lot of trades that's local, that's in the neighboring counties and regions, but then we also cast our net, you know, on the West Coast and everywhere else to try to get the most competition. We do our outreach, we do our advertising publicly, and then we educate and do some trade fairs. I think on this project, we had over 150 folks that participated in the trade fair via Zoom, which is pretty crazy. And, you know, that's what everybody was doing, you know, last year. But for that participation to be that high was really incredible. Then we go through the pre-qualification process, not only the MEP trades or mechanical, electrical, and plumbing trades that are required to pre-qualify with your district, Bureau of Educational Codes, but also our pre-qualification process to ensure that we have the most qualified trade contractors bidding the project. We solicit, we gather all our bid documents, put together all the bidding information and instructions to bidders. We hold pre-proposal meetings, and then we request deadlines and basically clarify any questions that have all the bidders. Our design team, PBK, was very engaged with us through this process to answer any questions and ensure that the scope is fully defined and the trade contractors are giving us a complete and competent a bid at the end of the day. Then once we received all the bids, we go through a two-week bid scope, de-scope process. And that is looking at every single bid, open up every package. And, you know, you may have bidders that are at a price that's at this point, and then you might have one at this point. Well, why is there such a gap? So we try to learn, we try to educate, we try to get all the information we can so we have all the data available to us to make the best recommendation and to put together the most competent and complete guaranteed maximum price. So that's a little history of the process there. Going through our cost estimate history, you know, the RFP, when we were competing for the lease-leaseback contractor RFP, the RFP stated the $12 million number back in June, and then we had another number at 14.5, and so on, as you can see. There is definitely a lot of things that have happened in this market, not only at the national level, but here at the regional level, because of market-driven factors from all kinds of different directions. But there is some specifics that are kind of our triple threat and three different factors that we'll talk about today that we feel is resulted into a number that is around 17.1 back in, you know, a couple weeks ago when we closed the books on all the numbers. I can tell you as of today that our GMP is holding. And if you look at other projects that have bid beyond the date that we did our GMP, you have a number of steel prices, wood prices, and other PVC products that have escalated since then. So we have locked in our prices based on our GMP tonight that we're presenting. A little bit of the history about our trade partners. As you can see, every single bar in here is every package. So every number here or every bar represents a package like electrical, plumbing, wood framing, concrete, earthwork, and so on. Every single scope of the project as it comes together. We solicited probably over 2,000 folks in our database, which we use a computer software database called Building Connected. 400 of those actually physically opened it up, looked at the drawings, went through it, started asking questions. And that's in this market right now, based on the region being so busy and being the summer month coming up, a lot of school projects are being bid out. And that was really phenomenal. That was good numbers for us to see. We received over 170 bids. On an average, we targeted 6. We got some as high as 11 in electrical package, which is really, in my 25 years in this region, it's unheard of to get 11 electrical contractors bidding a project anywhere, whether it's in Marysville, whether it's in Sacramento, whether it's in San Francisco. An average number of bids that we received is 4. We try to target, you know, 3 to 5. That's kind of the sweet spot. So 4 we were really happy with. And we have a kind of a 47 packages total. So that means we'll have 47 subcontracts that go out to all the trades. Very, very productive and a great bid that we received with everybody. Great participation. Some of the factors we looked at when we start de-scoping things were, you know, we looked at labor and specific trades that were having very difficulties filling in craft positions, skilled and trained, you know, labor. Carpenters, you know, bricklayers, pipe setters, iron workers, you know, across the board, you're seeing everybody at least over 50%, you know, or 40% having difficulty filling their trades to cover the amount of volume of work that's happening here. not only in the national level, but really this is regional numbers here in the Northern California area. I think COVID is still, we're still in the coattails of that. And I think everybody's starting to get more traction as things open up. Vaccines start coming around. We're going to see some more people, I think, being more comfortable. However, the ENR just came out, which is the engineering news record, came out that about 50% of the construction workers are still a little bit skeptical of the vaccine. So we're not sure how that's playing out right now, but we really haven't seen too much trend up or down based on when COVID rolled out last year and through the summer and fall of last year. So like I said, there's some key packages that were over budget. If you look at our bid packages of earthwork and utilities, steel and miscellaneous metals, and wood framing, which contributes to a pretty majority part of the GMP, just within these three packages really was the drivers of where we saw our initial estimate, our latest estimate, around 15 million to where it's at today at 7.1. And we'll go through each one of these in a little detail. There's a lot of market-driven factors with underground utilities, with fuel costs as everybody, goes to their gas station and fills up their car these days. You can see that the fuel cost is climbing. PVC has had a significant increase. But on this project, we really wanted to ensure that we were delivering on the schedule expectations of phase one and making sure that we had the parking lot completed, before school started in August of this year. So our schedule expectations are showing two crews are required through the summer. Our earthwork contractor that we're recommending for this project is ready to go the Saturday after school is out. Bid package 32 on steel. These are graphs showing percent increases on steel per ton from a few months ago. And as you can see, it has skyrocketed over the last couple of months. And as of early discussions with Nucor, our team visited Nucor site this past weekend in Volkcraft, and they're saying that for every week from here on out for at least four more months, steel is going to rise at $100 per ton per week. And then on top of that, steel lead times, meaning how long it fabricates the steel, is going to increase by 2 weeks every week from here on out for at least 4 months. And metal decking is something that right now everybody's looking at. Earliest time is February next year. Good thing on this project, we have very close trade partners that we trust that come to a table for us on this project. And we've locked in lead times and escalation prices during the bid to ensure that they hold their pricing. So we feel really confident that we're going to deliver on this, where some other projects that are lagging their bidding process is feeling impacts and additional impacts of cost and schedule. The other package, the other package with wood framing is another one that I don't think is new news to anybody. But it's one that has completely increased since October and November of last year. We're riding on the coattails of multiple fires that devastated a lot of our communities here in Northern California. There's houses starting to be built right now, the Tubbs fire, in Santa Rosa area. So the labor material going into all the rebuilds is one driving factor. The other driving factor is, COVID hit a lot of lumber mills really hard. And a lot of the lumber mills that didn't have the new technology or that were run down and that had some issues with their systems, they were shut down. So you have a surplus of wood and lumber and trees in Georgia but they can't fill it fast enough in factories because there's not enough factories to really stay up with the demand. So, and then there's new factories that they're trying to bring online, but that takes 6 to 8 months to bring online. And some of these factories in rural areas, you know, don't have the labor experience enough to use the new technology peers. So it's kind of a, it's coming from all different areas with the lumber industry right now. And obviously that's, we've seen a huge increase on that with all our stick frame type building. You'll look at and ask yourself, well, should we do it by metal studs instead of stick frame? Well, the metal studs is being affected by steel pricing. So it's all kind of rising at the same price point. So members of the board, I appreciate it again for this presentation. Mr. Barnett, you know, if you have anything else for me to divulge in, please let me know, but open up for any questions and answers.
Absolutely. Thank you, Mr. Matwade. So ladies and gentlemen of the board, as you can see, we've kind of gone through, walked you through the process of the economics of how we ended up with the guaranteed maximum price, and just kind of where we ended up with this project. So with that, we'll go ahead and open up the open you guys up for any questions. We're here to answer and clarify anything that you need clarification on.
Yes, go ahead. Oh, I have one quick question. Generally on a lease back, we have some kind of a contingency in place, and I don't see one on this project. Is there a contingency on this project?
Yes, there's a 2.5% contingency on this project that is included into the guaranteed maximum price. In the event that we do not use that contingency, it'll come back to the district in the form of a deductive change order.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
The question I have is with this, looks like a $3 million increase in the project. And what I saw presented was that we think that we're going to cover that through our nominal development fees. And I just wondered, are we sure of that?
Yes, we've collected almost $2 million in developer fees this year. And we will have approximately 800,000 remaining after allocating the additional increase from the developer fee fund. And then if you recall last board meeting, the board approved a contract with Joe Dixon to help us in our mitigation efforts, with the future developers, that are lined up to start building in our area.
Thank you.
Other board members, comments or questions? And I do know that, I guess I didn't wait very long. You had a drawing or a plan that was up on the screen, Mr. Wade, and it, I think it really was probably the same drawing. And Mrs. Lossing did send an email out today that discussed it, but I just wanted to make sure that the plan that we're looking at, or we're having this guaranteed maximum price, is the same plan that was presented to the board back in November. And
yes,
the answer.
Absolutely.
So I know Mr. Crawford, we had some discussion. So we are having a 4-lane width track.
Yeah.
Okay. With field and hard courts out back, and
we had that whole discussion. I remember.
Yeah, but I do see it on the drawing, and it's laid out, and so everything that we see from November, we would anticipate seeing in August of 2022. Yes. Okay.
That's good. Thank you.
Any other comments or questions from board members? I would just like to say thank you, Travis, and thank you, Mr. Wade, for your presentation tonight, and Travis and Penny, that all you've done for this project. I think it's going to be fantastic for the community, not only of Arboga, but it's going to be very beneficial for Yuba Gardens, and I think it's going to be a great thing for our district.
Mr. Go ahead. Just interrupting that last point about the track. Are we, is that, we don't want people to have the Mr. Wei, can you project that diagram up again, those plans?
Yeah, yes I can.
Yeah. I just wanted to confirm that because what I understood was we had the track in January of 2020 and talked about the type of track, and then we talked into sort of a modified form of a track that was I just want to make sure that we're all on the same page. So is that Mrs. Lossing, your understanding of the track, is that, and Mr. Barnett, is that the same as what Mr. Rasmussen and Mr. Crawford just shared?
Yes, we're going to have to go dig a little bit deeper on the exact specs of the track. If memory serves me, I think when that question was raised, I think it was raised if it was a full size track. And if I recall, there had to be some modifications to that size of the track due to the footprint out there. And so we can get that information, the exact specifics and dimensions. But I do recall that, I don't remember, it was a 6-lane track that was requested at the beginning. And then we said, hey, we have to do a 4-lane. And given the...
Yeah, that was me. Yeah, that's right.
Right. So I'm just kind of jogging my memory. So I remember we had to kind of shrink it down to the 4-lane.
Yeah.
And that has not changed since that meeting. So those things are still implemented, given the footprint out there. Because that was the big rub was, you know, track or no track, there's definitely need to be a track. So we continued with that planning with a little bit of modification to the sizing. However, they do have a track out there now. And it's not super small. It's not a huge modification, but I know that you had to kind of squeeze it in for the footprint.
No, I appreciated that fact. No, really. I was the one pushing for the track.
Right.
So thanks.
Absolutely.
And I just wanted to clarify that the track, because what was discussed in January of 2020 was a competitive, up to standard. This is a sort of a utilitarian track that people will be able to, but it's not up to. Okay. I think we're closer. I just wanted to make sure.
Right. And it was basically, to hit that footprint. So you're tracking correct, Mr. Cena and Mr. Crawford, that we took everything you said and the other board members and community's input, and we still implemented that into the plan. So I really appreciate, you know, the board supporting this project, the community. I know it's huge, like Mr. Rasmussen saying, it's going to be a great project. We're looking forward to breaking ground on it. As you can see, obviously, there's many factors that happen here with escalation prices. And you'll see a lot of on my side as we move forward with board agenda items. You'll kind of see me stressing and wanting to slap the table to move things forward, because obviously we're seeing escalation prices rise quickly. And there's no really end in sight anything anytime soon to see those prices slow down. So you'll see moving forward, like Mr. Wade said, he went ahead and basically slapped the table on his end and locked in prices. So I really appreciate Core's foresight to do that. It's saving us some money. So with that, again, we'll turn it back over to you guys if you have any other further questions.
I do just have one comment. I'm looking at the presentation from November 10th, 2020. Number 6 item is field and DG track, 4-lane width, 0.2-mile track, is what was discussed in November.
Perfect.
So.
And that is what will be laid down.
Okay.
Thank you, Randy.
Thank you. Any other comments or questions? Thank you very much, Mr. Wade, for your presentation. I'll entertain a motion.
Thank you. Motion to approve.
Motion to approve by Trustee Crawford. Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Trustee Davis.
Kemp. Boom.
Trustee Boom. Thank you. Roll call vote. Trustee Davis.
Yes.
Trustee Crawford.
Yes.
Trustee Boom.
Yes.
Trustee Criddle.
Yes. Yes.
Sorry, Doug Criddle. Trustee.
Yes.
Trustee Hasty.
Yes.
Trustee Gary Criddle.
I already said yes.
Okay. Just trying to reconfirm. It's not even late yet tonight, and I'm already. So motion carries 7 yes. Thank you very much. Educational services, number one, board policy 5121, students. The purpose of the agenda item is to request the board hold a public hearing regarding the revisions to board policy 5121, students. The public hearing is now open. Dr. Greco?
So at direction of the board last week, or at last meeting, we went back and met with administrators from the junior high sites, and then as well as the teachers union. We went through and looked at the language that was people were addressing, and we made the requisite changes. There was agreement between both groups on the language. And so the first change really from when we brought it back last time was after the superintendent or designee at direction of the board, which is implied by a board policy, but to make sure that everyone was feeling comfortable, that's been inserted there. We changed district standards to California state standards there in the next paragraph. And then going down just a little bit under CF 6162.5, we changed the language on unexcused absences. So we had whenever a student misses an assignment or assessment.
So Dr. Greco, sorry for interrupting. So we're on page 62, right?
Yes, sir.
Okay. So if board members can get caught up there, page 62. Okay. Go ahead, Dr. Greco.
Okay. So the piece that we amended from last time was when a student has an unexcused absence, the teacher will determine the appropriate credit to be awarded. So that was one change that we had all agreed on. And then for this policy, the only other piece was another place at the end where it has the superintendent or designee. And then we just added the clause at the direction of the board. And that was the changes to 5121.
Thank you, Dr. Greco. Mm-hmm. Is there any discussion from public? Any other discussion from board members or staff? Okay, we'll entertain a motion to close the public hearing.
Motion to close.
Motion to close by Trustee Davis. Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Trustee Boom. Roll call vote, Trustee Davis.
Yes.
Trustee Crawford.
Yes.
Trustee Boom?
Yes.
Trustee Doug Criddle?
Yes.
Trustee Hasty?
Yes.
Trustee Gary Criddle?
Yes.
Trustee Rasmussen, yes. Motion carries. Public hearing is closed. Now, is there a motion regarding revisions to board policy 5121?
Motion to approve.
Motion to approve by Trustee Davis. Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Trustee Hasty. Roll call vote. Trustee Davis?
Yes.
Trustee Crawford?
Yes.
Trustee Boom?
Yes.
Trustee Doug Criddle?
Yes.
Trustee Hasty?
Yes.
Trustee Gary Criddle?
Yes.
Trustee Rasmussen? Yes. Motion carries, 7 yes. Educational services number 2, board policy 6146.5, instruction. The purpose of the agenda item is to request the board hold a public hearing regarding the revisions to board policy 6146.5, instruction. The public hearing is now open. Dr. Greco?
Okay. So if you guys could turn to page 74 of your packet, that's where the revision to the policy is going to be. And it's in just in the paragraph that's good for this time of distance learning and blended learning. In talking with the site's administration, looking at the number of students academic level and what we would have non-promote wise, what we saw was a systems issue. So if you look at the general data on non-promote levels, they were going to be at the 2.0, 7 or 8 times as high as what you would have had on a regular year, which speaks to a systems issue as much as a student issue on this situation. So the kind of compromise that we looked at for this year, and so you had heard somebody say promoting everyone earlier, the change in policy would actually be lowering it from a 2.0 to a 1.0 for this year only, and then allowing teacher input to be able to have a process in place for students. We also checked to make sure that all the contracts and stuff had been done at the school and all of that was in place. So what this would do is amend it to being able to walk this year from a 1.0, from a 2.0 down to a 1.0. That is still, with the current numbers, gonna give you about twice as many non-promote walkers as we would have in a standard year.
And each student still is on the contract for the fourth quarter?
Yes, Jeff.
So they still have to meet that 2.5 GPA and all their, as far as their contract for the fourth quarter, plus their 90% attendance and whatever the contract reads, it's still all in place. And then the cumulative still, if it comes out to a 1.0, they still graduate?
They're able to promote in ceremony from the 1.0, yes.
But they have to meet the contract.
No, so the contract for 2.5 in this year only would be lowered. So anywhere down to a 1.0 with teacher input. And so what this basically does is for kids that have had those obstacles you've heard about, but they've been showing effort, they're trying, the staff and students, the outreach efforts have been met. It allows them to modify to say, you know what, we recognize that we have a systems issue here and that we're going to allow you to promote. The below 1.0, when talking, and Angela may be able to speak this as well, in talking to the group, what it kind of came back to was if you're below a 1.0, probably you have not engaged. So if we've had outreach efforts and tried everything to get you and you're still just blatantly not trying in school, that gives them the ability to say, okay, these students aren't going to. But that's where the teacher input comes in. So when you have a student who's in that situation, teachers will be able to say, you know what, yes, we've tried everything. We've done outreach. The school's done home visits. We're not seeing that. And those students then wouldn't walk.
But the contracts you said were in place at all the sites. You checked that and everybody's on a site contract that needs to have one, a curriculum contract or whatever. Anyways, so on the contract itself, does the contract read the 2.5 or does it read, because the cumulative is 1.0 and the contract, the way it reads, is a 2.5 for the fourth quarter.
Right. And there's some, I would say the contracts are written what they were in standard language because we haven't amended board policy yet on it. So this would be then allowing them to be able to go and look lower than that for the 2.5 for the fourth quarter.
Okay, so the contracts don't necessarily say 2.5 for the fourth quarter.
Correct.
Thank you.
Yep. And Dr. Greco, it looks as though it's a cumulative average of the 1.0, so that would be throughout the entire year?
Yes.
Any other comments?
Questions? Well, what the kids went through this year, I wholeheartedly support it, I'll tell you that.
Thanks, Frank.
Sure.
Are there any comments from public? Not hearing any, I'll entertain a motion to close the public hearing.
Motion to close.
Motion to close from Trustee Crawford. Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Trustee Davis. Roll call vote. Trustee Davis?
Yes.
Trustee Crawford?
Yes.
Trustee Boom?
Yes.
Trustee Doug Criddle?
Yes.
Trustee Hasty?
Yes.
Trustee Gary Criddle?
Yes.
Trustee Rasmussen, yes. Motion carries 7 yes. Now I'll entertain a motion regarding the revision to board policy 6146.5.
Motion to approve.
Motion to approve by Trustee Crawford. Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Trustee Davis. Roll call vote. Trustee Davis?
Yes.
Trustee Crawford?
Yes.
Trustee Boom?
No.
Trustee Doug Criddle?
Yes.
Trustee Hasty?
Yes.
Trustee Gary Criddle?
Yes.
Trustee Rasmussen, yes. Motion carries 5 yes, 2 no's, and those were Trustee Boom and Trustee Gary Criddle.
Excuse me, wait.
Yes.
I said yes.
Oh, I am so sorry.
That's okay.
Yeah, I was the only no, Randy.
Okay. Sorry, Lisa.
Wait, is today Monday?
Ouch.
Okay, motion carries 6-1. Trustee Boom was the only no. And let's see if we can get the number 3 right here. Okay, number 3, secondary school 4-day blended in-person instruction. The purpose of the agenda item is to request the board approve allowing all secondary school students the opportunity to attend blended in-person instruction 4 days per week beginning 5/25/21, provided Yuba County enters the orange tier on 5/18/21.
7 days. Okay.
Mr. Cena? Or?
I can address this one. What we're asking the board tonight is on March 20th, CDPH updated the health and guidance for reopening schools. And the physical distancing requirement for students became 3 feet between student desks. Prior to that, it had been 6 feet between student, 3 feet between student chairs. Prior to that, it had been 6 feet between student desks when practicable or after a good faith effort, and no less than 4 feet. But on March 20th, they changed it. And that was effective immediately. On 4-9, our district granted the opportunity to students in a phased-in process that students kindergarten through sixth grade would have the opportunity to attend in-person instruction 4 days a week. And that was phased in beginning April 20th with grades K through 3, and then followed up on April 27th with grades 4 through 6. Now, in the guidance, it says that secondary schools cannot implement the 3 feet distancing between chairs until the transmission rate in the county is low to moderate. Low to moderate is interpreted as orange, the orange tier. So what happened, as you know, our transmission rates, we're in the red tier. And on Tuesdays, the COVID-19 CA.gov publishes by 1 o'clock every Tuesday what the updated case rates and positivity rates are for each county in California. So today, Yuba County registered a 5.0 case rate and a 3.5 positivity rate. So that's in the orange tier, which means that if Yuba County is in the reaches that criteria again next week, next Tuesday, that the earliest Yuba County could enter the orange tier would be May 19th. It'd be a week from tomorrow. So what this agenda item is requesting that the board approve, allowing secondary students the opportunity to attend schools 4 days a week, provided Yuba County enters the orange tier meets the criteria on May 18th, and then would enter. So this actually they'd enter on 5/19. This way, we could send notice to all staff on that students would have this opportunity beginning May 25th, which would be basically 2 weeks, less than 2 weeks of school. But what the dynamic of students being in person has done is that the more experience that students have in person, the demonstrated level of efficacy of performance is enhanced and increased. So this is something that we'd like to continue to follow the guidance. And when the guidance says that it's okay to allow this opportunity, that we allow students that opportunity. And in looking at where this would be a problem, it's a small percentage of the rooms that would not be able to meet the needs. And those are being targeted problem solved, and addressed, prepared, so that we can ensure a student's health and safety in attending school 4 days in person.
Thank you, Mr. Cena. Is there questions or comments from board members?
The question I have is you're into the last couple of weeks of teaching. And to me, the unfortunate thing is the district has gone through iteration of changes. And so what I'm wondering is the true benefit of, and because the county may not make the orange tier. And here you've got everybody running around trying to get ready for it. So, and I'm just asking, what do our principals say? Are they supporting this? Do our teachers support this at this late date?
Well, I can speak for the principals who, yes, they see as I said, when students have the opportunity to attend school in person, it is transforming. It's where learning and connection, you know, so as we've just discussed about students, you know, having a hard time performing, there's a demonstrated instant impact that has an improvement. So it could say that for some students, it would help them, you know, finish above the line, finish strong, meet those needs. And, but from grades four, I'm sorry, throughout the system, teachers appreciate having more students in class because fewer kids are on distance learning, plus the connection with students. So throughout our COVID journey, it's been a series. It's just been a constant state of making choices between, you know, not completely clear, not completely, you know. And so at this time, is it worth the disruption, the what you shared? And what we're operating on is that, yes, it is, because it provides students that opportunity.
Thank you.
Other board members?
Yes, I actually had a question just as a point of clarification because I was asked this today. Does this mean it's going back to school that all of the Zoom meetings and virtual distance learning, that basically ceases to exist for now until the end of the school year?
No. This is simply allowing students who attend. Right now, students are in cohorts, and they're on Tuesday and Wednesday, cohort A, Thursday, Friday, cohort B. What we did when we, starting in April 20th, is students grades K through 3, they still attend. It's a hybrid. It's still blended learning. 4 days a week. And students who are on distance learning, full-time distance learning, they stay home and they continue with distance learning. So it's just allowing students to have the opportunity to, instead of just going Tuesday and Wednesday, they're able to go Tuesday through Friday in a blended model. Now, as far as the Zooms and the virtual field trips or those types of things, that everything else stays the same. Everything stays the same except students are able to be in. They don't have to be in those cohorts as strictly defined as they were before March 20th. Does that help? Okay.
Yes. Thank you.
Yeah, but you're right. It's really difficult because we are descending out of, you know, stay at home order and all that. And so, how much clutch, how much gas as we enter into this next phase, it's going to be choppy. But everything else stays the same, and that is very much clear until. Or according to what we can do in Orange Tier, until June 15th,
And then June 15th, the state is going to, there's going to be an openness, and we assume they're going to, the tiered system is, as we understand it, is going to be no longer, and there'll be a new system.
So I would just say, you know, it seems to me the district and the board has been driven by guidance and our desire to try to get kids back in school as much as we possibly can. And I would just say if the guidance allows more children to be back in school, then it seems like we shouldn't deviate from the guidance. I do know that there's going to be concerns at the site. Who knows? There might not be any more kids show up. It might only be the kids that are, well, there might not even be any more. Maybe all the parents in the classroom say, I can only get my kid there on Tuesdays and Wednesdays. So I'm only going to keep them there on Tuesdays and Wednesdays. And it might be, you know, it may not rise. I think the intent or the hope would be that it would. So kids are going to have somewhat more of a normalcy at the end of this year. I do know it's going to be a little more concerning for the sites, for students showing up. You're going to have more kids show up in the morning to try to get tested and get into classes. But again, it seems like we've told the public that we're going to try to get your kids back in school as much as we can, as long as the guidance allows it. Understanding, I think if we wouldn't have the 8.1 last week, we could be a whole lot better with regards to the case rate, and we could have the kids back in much sooner. But really, the county has dictated when we could do that.
Any
more? Go ahead.
I just want to double check on your statement about the classrooms that are too small with the guidelines as they currently are. Those are being addressed, and they will be moved to a new location if they need to be, so that there's enough space in each classroom.
Yeah, that's one solution. Other solutions are modifying. We're working with very resourceful people who are, you know, identifying where those situations exist, and there's a variety of ways of making it work.
Okay. Good. Yeah.
Any other comments, questions? I'll entertain a motion.
Move to approve.
Motion to approve by Trustee Hasty. Is there a second?
Second, Gary Criddle.
Second from Trustee Gary Criddle. Roll call vote. Trustee Davis?
Yes.
Trustee Crawford?
Yes.
Trustee Boom?
Yes.
Trustee Doug Criddle?
Yes.
Trustee Hasty?
Yes.
Trustee Gary Criddle?
Yes.
Trustee Rasmussen, yes. Motion carries, 7 yes. Educational Services number 4, 2021-22. MJUSD return to 5-day school week. The purpose of the agenda item is request the board approve returning to 5-day traditional in-person instruction, full instructional days for all grade levels in accordance with concurrent public health guidance for the 2021-22 school year beginning August 11, 2021. Mr.
Cena? Yes, thank you. So this is the board sets direction and setting, getting ready for next year, just clarifying the plan for next year in terms of the expectation of how many days. Is it blended? What's it going to look like next year? And like we've shared Governor Newsom's press conference and Tony Thurmond's memorandum, and then at last week's at the last board meeting, shared the PowerPoint presented by the California Department of Public Health, and there was a copy that board members have hard copy.
basically that encouraging schools, school districts to plan for in-person full-time, it'd be a full day, 5 days a week in-person in classrooms, and that it would be, but there'd be health and safety protocols in place, most notably is wearing masks. Students and staff still be required to wear masks, and then other health and mitigating protocols in place. And that what this is based on is it's based on the science that the virus isn't transmitted at schools in general because of the protocols and the and because of students, but also because of the vaccinations and the testing. And and so this is what the guidance is for next year. And what this would do is by formally stating that our district's plan is to return to school 5 days a week with in accordance with concurrent health and safety guidance, that that what this would do is it allow families to know or understand what the expectation is for next year, so then they can plan, because there will be some families who will want to stay on a distance learning type learning model. And that is, we've talked about the new version of the Abraham Lincoln Independent Study Program serving the needs of those families. So as a formal statement of what the plan is for next year in that regard, then families can make decisions, which then helps drive staffing as to what percentage of families are going to choose this this instructional model, and as well as letting everybody know what is happening. Currently, there is sort of a gun shy with understanding, okay, well, how normal will it get? And so this is a way to formally state what we're doing, so that we all know what the direction is, and we can plan accordingly.
The one question I have, and given that we've enlisted the help of I don't know what the consultant was to provide testing on the sites, is that could the district mandate vaccinations?
That's a good question. They were talking about that this morning, because they were talking about the FDA approving. And that is a district decision. Your question was, could schools or could a district? And I believe the answer is yes. Is there a state, has that or any government type, you know, said, hey, this is going to be required? So the answer is could. At this point, that's not the intention. And that's not required. It's not the guidance right now is it's encouraging. Everything we see, read, and hear right now is encouraging the districts make this plan. And that's basically what would be happening tonight. Yeah, that's what we're planning. And that's what, you know, because we know that COVID, we're not in control, and we don't know what's going to happen.
Right.
So the flexibility would be that according to the public health guidance. But like I said, right now it's planned for 5 days. And in recommending and encouraging vaccinations, which is what we're doing, but not requiring at this point.
Thank you.
Other comments, questions? Yeah, and I would just like to say it seems like that's been our driving mission to the public, is to try to get kids back to some kind of normalcy as much as we can. And you know, even by us, whatever the outcome of this agenda item, who knows what our state is going to be or the state of the area is going to be next August and what kind of protocols maybe are going to have to be in place. But I, you know, again, I think we owe it to the public to say our goal is to get you all back in school. I'll entertain a motion. Or is there any other comments? I'll entertain a motion.
Motion to approve.
Motion to approve by Trustee Davis. Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Trustee Doug Criddle. Trustee Davis?
Yes.
Trustee Crawford?
Yes.
Trustee Boom?
Yes.
Trustee Doug Criddle?
Yes.
Trustee Hasty?
Yes.
Trustee Gary Criddle?
Yes.
Trustee Rasmussen, yes. Motion carries, 7 yes. Our next item is Educational Services number 5, Expanded Learning Discussion. The purpose of the agenda item is for staff to share with the board the course of the conversations related to the expanded learning for students at Lyndhurst and Marysville High School. Dr. Greco?
Yeah, thank you, President Rasmussen. I'm going to go ahead and share my screen. Can everybody see the MJUSD up there on the screen?
Yes.
Okay, so a couple of you were there at the conversation the other day. So we wanted to come back. And first of all, I'd like to say, and I think this was relayed earlier in the meeting, this was an excellent meeting. It was, not to get philosophical or cheesy, it's what you hope out of America. It was people with different perspectives coming together to have a cordial conversation and figure out the best path forward without rushing to a decision based on an immediate response. But the conversation lasted for about 2.5 hours, and I'm gonna go ahead and just kind of run through the highlights of that conversation for you. So the conversation is in structure of what's called our expanded learning grant. So we've received extra money from the state for this summer, and next school year in order to be able to expand learning options. So before we kind of get to the gist of that part of the conversation, phase one of that happened very quickly after the grant was approved, and that was getting summer school set up for this summer and then next summer as well. So reserving funds in order to make sure that part happens. So this summer, it's focused on intervention and re-engagement, and we're looking at it through SEL and hands-on activities at the TK-8 level, and then obviously credit remediation at the high school level. And summer school this year is running June 14th to July 2nd, based on request of family and staff. And then next summer's programming will be determined as we go through the year. So as we use our formative data and we see where we're filling holes and what's still needed, we'll make decisions to what the program will look like next summer, but that we are putting money in reserve commensurate to what we're doing this summer to offer again next summer as well. So phase two of that is the expanded learning options for next year. And so we discussed these with site admin, MUTA, and then through survey to our staff. So we had about 300 survey results come back from teachers. And the options were based on the conversations, and these were very preliminary conversations, but we wanted to get something out to our staff. So we had 284 at the time that I made this presentation responding to the survey. And this was initial work. We're gonna continue with where that's going. We have hopefully meetings being set up with elementary teachers. Right now, the focus had been heavily on the secondary because of graduation. But beginning to look at what some of the things that we want to do in this package of expanded learning for next year with the teachers. And then once we've finished that, we'll have a survey going out to our families to see which one of the options would be the things they'd want us to look at as well, or what would be useful to them in trying to help with the expanded learning options. So the items on the survey that teachers found very beneficial, I just kind of highlighted the top three. So the highest one was structured intervention time during the school day. After school, small group focused intervention was the next highest. And then from there, summer school. So conversations like you see are ongoing with the structured intervention. And then summer school is something we already have in place. What this will end up looking like is a set of options that we'll bring back to the board once we finish going through with all stakeholders. So next thing down, items teachers found somewhat beneficial. Extending an extra class period for selected students after school. So maybe not extending the whole entire day, but creating a seventh period or an extra period for staff that is willing to stay and work and that teachers are able to then run with students who need that intervention that's been diagnosed. increased certificated support in the STARS. So we have kids in our STARS program, expanding that and being able to have some certificated teachers that are able to push into that program to be able to offer intervention through STARS from our qualified staff. And then the other one that came up high on the list was after-school parent-student institutes. So this is working with families and students at home after hours in order to work on how you best support education from the home so we can get that synergistic effect between school and home that we're looking for. There was a ton of open comments. I kind of just took some highlights for tonight. Additional classified staff, and this comes up in several areas. I think one of the biggest ones was paraeducator support and intervention. And this would be targeted, not just putting paraeducators throughout the school, but we'd primarily look at like TK through three literacy, as well as math intervention and support at the secondary level. So those were two of the top areas that came up for focusing paraeducator support. This goes along with what we're trying to do through the intervention conversations in the PLC model is provide intervention and support in a timely manner, in a strategic way to students who are needing specific supports in order so they can continue on with the standard curriculum. We looked suggestions before school and after school tutoring. It is noted in there repeatedly that transportation is key to this. Anything that we do outside of our standard, so we have compulsory ed where students legally have to be with us. Sometimes we don't have great luck in keeping students with us when they're allowed to leave. Having transportation is key to making that happen. So being able to do it in a way that doesn't limit extracurriculars at the secondary, but also that transportation is provided to and from, so that we're able to keep students for that additional time. A teacher mentoring program, so teachers going through and picking students from the school in order to offer specific support outside of hours. After school clubs, and so a lot of times we'll look and think when we look at remediation, we're trying to fill gaps, the idea of just having like solid math or English, but a lot of the learning, I think most of our teachers could tell you, comes through the relationship that teachers have with students. So if you're having these positive school clubs, academic things like that outside of school hours that bring them in for academic reasons and tie them to the school, you get an effect across all of the school functions that they're participating in. There were a lot of concerns about anything outside of the mandatory day reaching the intended population. So a lot of times if it's the kids who are struggling the hardest, those are also the ones that are the most difficult to get to stay. And so there'd have to be a lot of relationship building in order to make that work. Continued PLC alignment of teaching and grouping for intervention. And so that came up several times. Credit remediation period during the day. So this would be instead of having an elective offering, having one of our labs where they're able to do accelerated work and work through some of our virtual programs to create credit remediation during the day. So they would lose one of their standard six classes and they'd be assigned a lab. They would then be able to work outside of hours to do additional credits as well through that lab. And then staggering in previous grade essential standards and common assessments to determine when gaps are filled. So this was a longer statement, but what it came up several times, the idea of having second grade and third grade, for example, working together so that second grade is coming up to fill some of the gaps that were maybe missed in this previous year. So a lot of it comes down to the collaboration and alignment of intervention through our teachers. So next steps from now, as we continue to look at this, we're going to survey parents to determine which of the services, once we finished working with internal stakeholders, they feel would best meet the needs. So if we all think that having a 5 o'clock session is the best thing in the world, but all of our parents tell us, yeah, but we're not coming back for that because we have X, Y, or Z, then that's not going to be effective. So we need to make sure it aligns between our community and our internal stakeholders. And then bring information to the board to decide which solutions can be implemented in a package format based on the remaining ELO funds. So once we take out the two summer schools, we'll have X amount of dollars left from there. From those dollars, we'll cost out. So fiscal and personnel, once we kind of get these ideas in order, they'll be able to say, in order to run these things that you're talking about, will cost X amount of dollars. With the remaining dollars, we'll say we can go and take option 1, 3, and 5, or 2 and 4, and any combination to create a package that we think is going to meet everybody's needs and trying to fill the gaps that have been created. Don't try to read this slide. This is just the fine print to ELO expenditures, but basically it's you have to improve services, extend the day. So there's things from extending the length of the school year, extending the length of the school day, to putting more services in. So the paraeducator support, having increased services during the day. So this is just kind of the fine language and saying that we can't use the money just to kind of do what we've been doing. There has to be something in addition that we do. And then brings us to the high school informational meeting that we had last week. So after our last board meeting, we got together and it was an ad hoc group of teachers from the high school's guiding coalitions, MUTA leadership, high school admin. We had three board members there with us. District leadership, and we came to talk about the high school schedules and the conversations that had been ongoing there. So the ongoing conversations at the high school really hadn't been on adding periods. The ongoing conversations that have been kind of longstanding seem to be based around intervention, and it's tying it to our PLC model. So both MHS and LHS, to different degrees, have had conversations around wanting to build an intervention time in alignment with the PLC model that we've heavily invested in. And the premise behind the PLC model when it comes to intervention is really, what do we want our students to know and do? And so this is the work they've been doing in aligning their standards and practices, so that you would have, if you're in math at, let's say, Marysville High School, and there's four teachers, and they're all teaching an integrated one course, you're going to get roughly the same alignment of standards, practices, assessments going on in those classes, so that if you were going to use them for intervention, they're interchangeable in what's been done. And then the next part is, how will we know if they know or don't? And so this is aligning the formative assessment. So as we teach these things, making sure that we have aligned measures to be able to determine what the students have gotten and what they haven't. Because when you know what they do know and don't know, then you're able to determine how you'll behave if they do. So that's extension, giving them something that goes beyond the standard curriculum, or intervention if they don't know. And so this is kind of the phase where this conversation comes in. And when you talk to the high schools, and I think there was a public comment earlier, that we've done a lot of work in area one and two, and we're really up now to level three. And that's figuring out how we do that intervention. What does that collaboration and intervention look like? The teachers have done a lot of collaboration and working towards getting that alignment, and there's varied levels of that across the district. But now how do you bring that together for intervention? Some of the elementary sites do it on the PLC sites by grouping students by data during that time. So they're sharing students across grade levels and grouping them by the need. So if I'm at Covalod and I'm in second grade, I might leave my regular teacher to go see another teacher. I'm doing really well in school, of course, because I love school. And so we're going to be doing an enrichment activity that's building rockets in order to extend some concept that we learned about gravity from our class. Whereas students who had missed that concept may be going over to one teacher's class because they realized the reason they weren't getting is because there was a math skill that they didn't understand. And then another group going because they seem to have missed for some reason part of the instruction, and they're getting kind of a repeat of the lesson. So it's grouping kids based on their needs in order to make sure that we're doing intervention in a way that doesn't leave a teacher trying to do four different interventions with different groups at the same time. So we've done extensive work on one and two. Three is where this conversation, kind of where the high schools were at and the guiding coalitions and across the schools. It presents conditions. The present conditions would require teachers to intervene during their class for multiple different needs. The goal of this designated intervention time is to share the load. So kind of like we talked about, making sure there's common intervention across departments or grade levels. So the ongoing conversation and change of periods. So there was no agreement or consensus on a change in the number of periods offered to students in this meeting. It was definitely something that I don't feel we could move forward with right away. I don't think there's any agreement on what that needs to be. And I think there's other options that we still need to look at. Everybody does agree that there's a problem and we need to do something about it very soon. And so the problem solving has already begun because the PLC model and the way they're working to align standards and get departments, if they hadn't started that a few years ago, the solution would be much more difficult. But our teachers have done an excellent job in getting us prepared in that condition right now. And then the majority of the group agrees that the conversations that have been ongoing at the high schools were based on the structured intervention time, not a change in the number of periods of the day. And the structured intervention time is needed as part of the PLC model. So the structured intervention was definitely the main conversation. And the takeaway that I think both schools have in common was that they realized that there has to be strategic intervention going on during the day. So going back through the conversation, there was pros and cons on the 7-period day when we use that as the model to discuss. So some of the pros, we're looking at the credits for graduation in the next 3 years. And like Mr. Freeman had in his statement, that's responsive to what had happened in COVID, as well as some of the data that we saw prior for graduation rates. And that'll come up in a minute. EL offerings, being able to get elective and CTE classes. So looking at it from students, and not just EL, but if you're in special populations, because as a district, we have a higher math and science requirement than most districts. We have an additional year. That it increases the load or decreases the number of electives or free offerings that they have. So the pro to adding more periods to the day, whether it be 7-period, 8, a block, rotating, would be that there's more elective offerings. Through FPM, we had to just recently add a bunch of ELD courses. And so that is putting a stretch right now, it's feeling like, on some of our elective and CTE programs. Elective options. So as you start to come out of this, the ability to offer more classes that are interesting to students. So not saying that math and science aren't. I love math and science. But it might be a computer programming or a game design or some other class that we're able to offer that draws kids in. And increasing this for students that aren't in special programs, then they're able to get further positive engagement. So very similar to MCAA being able to take a lot more electives during their time in the thing, in the school year, sorry. And then during the day intervention would be structured into that. You could have that as some of the kids getting a specific class for intervention. I think one concern that came out there that isn't listed on the other side is that not just turning into a study hall. It would have to be structured and trained and done in a way that's going to actually be intensive intervention, not just a place for kids to sit and if they didn't do their work, do it. On the cons side of thing, the final one was the pipeline to South and our real graduation rate. So we look at our graduation rates and they hold pretty good at the high schools. You're looking in the 90% range. When you look across the schools, though, you see that there's a number of students we can't serve that end up at South, end up at independent studies, end up leaving us for a charter over at Yuba County or some of the other places because they're not able to get the credits made up during the school day that they have. The cons that then came out on the other side of the conversation was teacher workload. So we're coming off of a very difficult year for everybody. Going back in, you would add an additional class, which would increase the workload, not just on the teacher, but on the student. So if you think about a student who has struggled in 6 classes and now they're going to have 7, that's an additional course that they're going to have to take. So there's some consideration and some training and shift in pedagogy we would have to go along with our grading practices and common alignment of standards. You'd have to look at how you teach a class and the workload that you're providing outside of the school day. This would allow fewer minutes per class period and more students overall for the teacher, which means it might be more difficult to reach each individual student. So if a caseload goes up from 180 to 215 kids, that's more grading, that's more interventions, that's more calls home, that's a lot more stuff to do. Academic minutes per subject came up as well. So right now, in order to add an extra period, you'd have to reduce each class by about 9 minutes per section. So this leaves less time in the class period for intervention. And unless there was a shift in pedagogy or the way we go about things, it would be more time outside of the classroom for students, which then increases the student workload. So again, for a student who is not in a special population and is maybe accelerating in school, that might be okay. For the students that we're really trying to target this idea at, adding the additional workload may not be an effective strategy. Still wanting to look at that a little bit more. And then buy-in and planning. And so I think that was one of the biggest ones that kind of come out of this is that we are down to a couple of weeks in the school year. People are going to walk away. They walked away last year with a whole lot of uncertainty kind of immediately and not knowing what was going to happen. The idea that master schedules are already built kind of at this point, and the idea that this is a conversation that if we were to start engaging in it, I think there is interest all around in engaging in this conversation, not necessarily a 7 period day, but what can we change? Looking at it through the first semester of next year, kind of getting buy-in and planning, and then talking to our families and students as well to find out, like, is this something that you would want? Do you think this is a good solution? So continuing that conversation to get buy-in and planning, but not moving forward necessarily with a change in bell schedule right now. The hard thing with education is it's flavor of the month a lot of the time. So we're constantly adding new things and changing. And so you can get burnout or fatigue on just this idea of new things coming in and changing based on an immediate whim. So if we're going to do something like this, we probably only get one shot at this kind of change. So we want to make sure that it's data driven and move forward with it in a way that's going to be effective to actually solve the problem that we're looking at. So that was everything that I saw and took notes on from the meeting. If there's anyone who was there at the meeting that has anything else they would like to contribute, I'm going to go ahead and drop the screen share and give the floor over to the other stakeholders who were there.
Yeah, Rocco, Doug Criddle, thank you for putting that together. I wanted to add that there was a lot of positive discussion. There was engagement with all the players, and really there was a lot of open and transparent conversations. I really went in there with my mouth shut and my ears and eyes wide open. It was very, very, very good to see that. And it was nice to see the relationship of everybody talking and bringing their passion to the table. So thank you, guys.
Dr. Greco, do we have any other sites that have a built-in intervention period currently?
So there's iterations of it at the junior high school, and it's different than the way the high school was looking at it. So there are some iterations, and they're different across the junior highs on how they go about that right now.
So both junior highs aren't lockstep?
All three junior highs are not lockstep.
All three, right. Okay. I don't know if you have history. Do you have any idea how those came about, how that intervention period came about?
No, I was not in the district at the time that happened, so somebody else would have to give you the history on that one.
Thank you. Any other comments or questions from board members? Well, thank you very much, Dr. Greco, and everybody that participated in that meeting. I think there's further discussion to happen.
Thank you very much.
So we do have a note here for closing the meeting. There's a group of teachers, and I'm not sure what teachers are going to speak, but I would ask those teachers to contact Lisa Mejia to give the particulars with regards to the closing of this meeting. Do we have a teacher that's going to speak?
Actually, Mr. Rasmussen, the request was that if we would be able to read that into the record.
Oh, okay. So what I would need then is some more information for Lisa to have from the family to be able to try to contact the family and that. So I'll go ahead and read it then. So a group of teachers would like to close the meeting in honor of brothers Adrian Trinosco and Julian Trinosco. I don't think I pronounced that right. Trinosco, thank you, who died in a recent auto accident. Both were Johnson Park students, Lyndhurst High School students. The brothers were part of the ROTC program at Lyndhurst High School. So our condolences to the family. Thank you very much, being adjourned.